Welcome to the DK 805 podcast. I'm Christy, and I'm here with Katrina, and it's the start of our new year. This is 2026, and we coming into this new year has been so difficult for me. It's been so difficult for me. So Katrina asked if we could do a podcast, and this is spur of the moment for us. Yeah. We have no planning today. But
been just been sharing a lot of the same. I think that's for me. That was just a lot of the shared of first the wording Happy New Year. When you're in grief, Happy New Year takes a whole new meaning, doesn't it? It doesn't have. That doesn't. There's a lot to process in that statement on its own.
There's a lot to process, and I hit a wall. Actually, you know, I hit a wall.
Yeah.
It was right around when Nick Reiner's murder.
Yeah.
That triggered an unleashed amount of emotions.
Yeah. I think for so many and in the community, it was just, you know, riveted through, and then just it's very polarized, right? And then, you know, you think, okay, this is going to just, you know, really help, you know, like break stigmas wide open. And we just, that's what we're here for, is that's what we want to do. We want to create a space where, you know, our sons no longer struggle. They're home. We are in grief and in loss, but we are here to still continue on to raise the awareness for the fentanyl crisis, to break the shame and stigma that comes as a parent, as a mother, when you your son or your daughter, you know, they don't recover. And that is that's the story that we're in. And we want to be there as advocates for those that are still trying to find their way through, which there is no right or wrong way. We both have explored that in so many, many ways with many different people now in the community that we both feel really like, which is when we first met, that was that mirror of we both did it very differently with our children. And the love, the same, like that's that whole, the same. The love is, as a mother, is infinite. And it never, even in passing, which people don't, that's what we're also going to share today, is that that love never diminishes, ever. It's, you wake up and you think about it all over again. And so we want to talk about these topics, kind of broad stroking that. But
absolutely. And one of the things that with the Nick Reiner case that started to trigger me is everybody had an opinion.
Yeah.
Everybody had an opinion. And right. All I saw when I saw that newscast, all I saw was another shattered family.
Oh, yeah.
It's a shattered family.
And the sister, the opinions that people had on how could...
The cumulative type
everything.
Of grief.
Mm-hmm.
And as a society, I have felt this. I have felt judged in my journey.
Oh, yeah.
And right after that, I knew starting this year, it's going to be a life-changing year for me with the courts. And the Happy New Year, I struggled. I hit a wall.
Yeah.
And I shut down.
And I felt
still,
it,
I'm
and
still,
I felt that because it was
still
like even
there.
Yeah, and even though you're, you know, because you spent a lot of time away during the holidays, and we've shared that before. People assume we're together all the time because we are when we are here. But Christy's world takes her in many different places, far away with her work, and we've been sharing through just the things that have been processing through, and that's what walking with someone in grief means, like allowing just the we don't always agree. We don't always agree on things, and and I've had a lot of just my own opinions, and I'm like, wait, okay, so this is the time, the reframing. This is this new year for me reframing. This came up in my Al-Anon meeting yesterday, and it was exactly what I needed to remind myself of, and we just wrote this down together. We both had this. We came together with the expectations of the false expectations of what grief looks like and how, or who and how people show up for you. And when that doesn't happen, the resentment that can feel, and just wanting to bring awareness to that, that your people that you once had, they are there, but they just show up differently. They expect you to be where you are supposed to be in their mind. And it's the same for us. We feel the same, like those people should be there for us in a different way. And I think if anyone watching this, that, you know, if you found us here, you're watching and you are in grief, and we're so sorry. And I was speaking with a mom that reached out the day before we went, I went to Al-Anon. And it was such a beautiful, loving, share that she shared with me about her loss of her son, fentanyl, and the journey for her. And I just felt so blessed that she was so open. That's the love of the community that we're in, like realness that people share their depth and they don't feel judged. And that's what, that's what we want to make everyone feel.
That's true. Because when Devin was alive, there were times I didn't know where I fit in. And then when Devin passed away, there's still times I don't know where I fit in.
Right.
And so, but when I'm in a room with moms that have lost their children, there's only acceptance and there's just a willingness to say, I'll walk beside you.
Yes.
I'm not the same person I was.
I'm not before, the same person.
Yeah, I'm just not. And my ability is to love deeper, but it's to pull back quicker.
Mm-hmm. That loving deeper, and that breaking wide open when you are just like faced with, okay, and I wrote that down, that rejection, it feels like that when you feel that you're separated from what you once knew and everything changes in the early stages of grief, I felt that deeply. And I realized it was like God's protection is what it ended up feeling. I had to analyze what was this, what was I feeling, but there was like a lot of like quiet time. And what that quiet time gave me, and I encourage anyone that's in the early stages of grief to allow that feeling to lead you to places that you can get support. For me, it was Al-Anon and it was church. And it was that early people that understood what I was walking. And I hadn't yet found my tribe yet, which is, like our connection where we feel like, I was getting there. It was coming. I realized that it wasn't. So there, again, those expectations, that's a setup for failing if you put all these expectations on people. So for me, it was working on myself. I gave myself the gift to say, okay, this time frame of really quieting down after this celebration of life, which is this awful wording in itself.
For Devin, I could not plan a service. Mm-mm. So I planned a birthday party. Yeah. I waited and I had his celebration of life.
Yeah.
Ugh, see, it still makes me want to throw up.
I had Dylan's celebration of life at a skate park because that's what he loved the most. And nothing made sense. Nothing made sense.
And the strong emotions that come through.
Yeah.
So here's a false expectation, and I put this on myself. I went to a high school reunion.
Mm.
20 days, probably 20 days, maybe 22 days. I don't even remember the time frame.
Yeah.
After Devin passed away. And I look at those pictures, and I see myself in those pictures.
Yeah.
And by all accounts, I look like an absolutely normal person.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen the picture, yeah.
I did my hair. I put my makeup on.
You wanted to feel normal.
I wanted to feel normal. And I know my justification for going there.
Mm-hmm.
My justification for going was that Devin had just passed away and that Alex had just had open heart surgery.
Right.
And I was absolutely overwhelmed.
Yeah. And needs to shut down. That's so much.
Well, I wanted to go back to a time in my life where it was a happier time.
Right.
I wanted to remember happier. I needed people to talk about happier moments.
Right.
But when I was at the high school reunion, I don't know if people are judging me. They're not going to say, hey, why are you here?
Right.
But I was judging myself.
Yeah.
Because it was, and I still do that.
Mm-hmm.
If I have a moment of happiness, I'm like, wait, how are you happy?
It's awful.
And it's just,
it's awful.
The brain is so polarized so much of the time. because I do have happy moments.
Yeah.
But then I have to remind myself, no, you're a changed person. Mm-hmm. So as a mom who's lost a child or a father, I think you always carry a little bit of sadness with you wherever you go.
Always.
Because there's a part of you that just is graduated from life. And so in carrying that little bit of sadness, I think it's another expectation that people think that if we talk about our child, we're in grief. We're not in grief.
We are in grief. But so reframe.
Okay.
We have to talk about. For me, this is the other thing that started. I just started thinking, like, you know, I don't want to be rushed, and I won't be rushed. I won't. I'm going to allow myself this little my little square on this earth. We didn't ask for this. We would never ever imagined our life in this. Yes, when your child is struggling with, substance abuse disorder and all that goes along with that.
A mom already dies 100,000 times.
100,000 times. You wait. You think that call is coming. And, you're running as fast as you can. So, yeah, that aftermath of, like, what it feels like, and it's that processing. But, yeah, that forever changed. Like, let it be a forever change where... Again, you mentioned it with the empathy that comes with it for other human beings, the compassion that I know I always had and have, but it's just everything's
amplified
and you want your experiences with people to be richer and share more because it's so much more time is more valuable.
Everything, so much more valuable.
Everything is like.
And when I said that. When we talk about our boys, we're not in grief. We're not in, like, broken down grief. We want to talk about them because in talking about them, it keeps us alive.
Yes.
But if we talk about them, often we can be excluded.
You triggered me again for that. Thank you. Because it is, that came up recently too. The more you have the capability of doing that gives this illusion, like, because I went back to work. I stayed working. I took time, but I kept my business. I kept working because that was what I was told to do by my aunt who had also lost. We lost in our family a young man, 19. And she said, it'll keep your hands busy. Like, keeping your hands busy, being around people and staying in and just remembering when you're not, that was a huge gift because I did want to just stop. But yeah, it was like... little things early on that I'm so grateful that the more capable you look, I guess that's the more capable you appear, that gives the illusion, that false illusion that we're done grieving because
we're
more capable.
It's a lifelong process.
It's enabled us to start this podcast. It's enabled us to want to be able to help other mothers that haven't yet found their way to, turn their pain into purpose. And I hope that anyone that's watching this can know that it doesn't have to be something like that we've chosen to do. There's so many ways, but it's, just to find that you're okay. And there is a new tribe and you will find, that if you reach for those things to not isolate, we've talked about that, to be in community. And there's so many resources. So this new year for us is that we're going to share more about what we feel and stop worrying about so much because it is a political time. We have really been able to, we've been a little guarded in our expression of, I'll say a lot guarded because we have to. I think because of now with, again, you brought up the Reiner case, having it be, we have to speak out now more loudly about our truth.
Right. And I know I've said this to you when we're not on air. I said, overdoses aren't political.
Discriminate. This is not a left or a right.
People are dying on both sides.
Right.
So even if I say something about Devin's overdose or he died, there's the false, I don't know if it's false, but people will say that, well, he was an addict. He knew the risk. Well, and I'm not speaking specifically of Devin. I'm speaking broad right now.
Right. Right. You've heard these things.
I've heard these things.
These are things
to
you've
me.
Heard,
I've
and I've heard
and
these
and
things.
And I'm talking broad. Yes. That, well, there's a risk in that they blame the person who took the risk.
Yes.
Well, what is that risk if somebody thinks they're purchasing something else and it isn't?
Right.
What is that risk?
Right.
What's it? That's not called an overdose. What is that called?
Poisoning.
Absolutely.
It's murder. And that is where, bringing back to where you were today, which is the court case.
Oh, man. And that was a hard one. Today was a hard day in court.
And there are things we can't talk about. Chrissy doesn't talk about. And I'm always just wanting to be of honoring. Sorry for that. I always do that. But just bangs your ear.
No.
But just in knowing that there are things she can't talk about at this point, but that there will be a time for that. But imagine being a mother in grief, and you're wearing your beautiful son around your neck in a necklace, and
that was a gift by another mother who lost her son.
Right, the love that comes, and to show up to face the person that you have to face, and that is that you're doing that to help raise awareness and make new, that there should be accountability, and that this is what this mother has to do when she, I don't have someone that I face. I don't have anyone that I can blame. I blame the system. I blame, this is where the political part comes. I blame, there's a system failure. We weren't being told about the fentanyl crisis for a long time. We were not being, there was not enough enough awareness that we are now seeing and feeling. And we weren't getting enough support for mental health and crisis team and things that, weed psychoses, things that we're now knowing more about, and we are going to start sharing those more. The more information that is shared, which is what we're getting in this community, it's coming out now. But imagine being a mother in grief, going to court on your day off from work when you've been working for a month straight.
It feels like a month straight.
To fly in and go to court, and that takes, that's the work of a warrior, mama. That is like, and I walk that with you. And
yeah, but
I am,
when I walk into that courthouse, yeah. I go to court by myself. But when I walk into that courthouse, you know what I have behind me?
Yeah.
I have an army behind me.
Yeah.
I see you with me. I see, oh my goodness, I wonder if I'll cry. I see all the other moms that don't know what happened to their children. There is somebody. And I often wonder, how would it feel to not know that it has to be so painful?
Yeah.
And there's other times where I have empathy for everybody. And I wonder, do they have siblings? Mm. Do they have, what's that mom? What does that mom feel?
This mom that I just recently shared with, we shared together. When you share, that's that real sharing. It was, it was reciprocal. She reached out, and I said, please reach out anytime. And we set up a time to talk. And her and her husband both are RNs, and they work in the prison system. And I didn't ask permission to use her name, so I won't use that today. But she wants to come on and speak on the podcast. We'll do that soon. And they are seeing, they were on the front lines of that part. Their son struggled for a long time. It wasn't, but that also was. So the investigation part, which is what she shared, it was treated as if because he was a struggling, he struggled with addiction, there was going to be no investigation. And they had to deal with that, even though they were able to, they knew the people in this small town, they knew the system, they knew the people that could have, and it just was not, it was dropped.
And the whole time in Devin's illness, I do remember screaming or getting angry, because when Devin was alive, I would be triggered with anger because I wanted to be heard. But I was dismissed.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there were times when I'd say, what's the price of a soul? What's the price of a soul? Mm-hmm. And it's painful.
Yeah.
It's painful because I was mistreated often.
Yeah.
And
why are we living in a society where we are not, if you don't have the right insurance at the right timing, which we always tried to help hold insurance with Dylan. I'm going to move this. I apologize. But at the time when, you know, you're like, we're following the rules and there's a cutoff with insurance and I understand all of that. And then you try to get online with getting you're paying for their insurance as their, they, you know, you, 26 is the age when insurance is, you're off your parents' insurance. And why are we in a day and age where there are not there's not a treatment center in every single, when they're detoxing and they need help and they are, going through withdrawals and they're in physical pain and even could risk death by their detoxing. Why is there not a right in every town in this day and age that there is a place to walk in with your loved one or that they can go on every, like in every town? It's for this area, 805, there is one. And that is a treatment center that, you know, it doesn't rate well. It's not even, so I won't say anything. I'm not going to say the name, but I will just say this is a time for change. The reform we're seeking will be that there will be in every town, an immediate need for a detox, for a
where well, you can, I hope
yes, without cost, without out of pocket. If you can't afford it, you can go get help.
Well, and I also hope that as we bring awareness, I want that to be there. But my question that goes in my mind over and over is, how did we get here?
Right.
How did we even get here that we need?
Yeah.
It's I don't have the answers.
I don't.
I just know I don't have the answers. And you are correct. We need more help. And we need it now. Not.
Yes.
And if it was something that was continually building, the more I couldn't read a lot when Devin was in his illness. Because it would scare me. And so I tried to focus on recovery, because if I read statistics, it scared me.
Yeah.
Although I knew statistically
it
was in the single digits of his recovery.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to hear the stories of death. So I only focused on the stories of recovery, which
it's hopeful,
It's hopeful. It's hopeful. But now, when I look at now when I'm reading Dope Sick and I'm reading other things, I have to physically put the book down and walk away.
Yeah.
But not knowing, it goes into that cycle of why didn't you know? Why didn't you know? Why you could have done more?
You know, I didn't have that answer in my left pocket. Why didn't I use that? People like assume I didn't have that answer. I didn't know what else to do. We had tried everything. And when you're going through it, you don't have the answer. It's not a one fit situation. It's not a one type of treatment program. It's not going, it's going to be whatever when that person is ready. For me, the Thrive method became really part of the last part of my son's journey with our life and his time here. And I'm so grateful for that because that is loving them where they're at in that meaning. We always love, I always say that again, but of course, but it's a different way. You come to just, again, be with them in any way that you can. You'll live with, you know, do anything you can that you, without living with regret. And you know, just, there's no one, the judgment and the shame. So it's like, but yeah, you'll never regret just, you know, being there in a way that just is without judgment, because they're not, if they're not ready or they're not meeting your expectations, just be there. Just, you know.
And I, fortunately, in Devin's journey, I did continually go to a treatment center, and I hope that I'll be able to do more work with them coming this next year. But they were there in the beginning.
Yeah.
They were there in the end.
Yeah.
The morning I found Devin, I found him. When the cops came over and there's like, should I call anybody? I think I don't know if I shared this before. But when I'm like, who are you going to call? Who?
Yeah.
And they're like, a pastor. And I'm like, there's nobody you can call. With that said, I called the treatment center. that was there in the beginning.
Yeah.
And one of the person, one person from that treatment center came over and sat with me because they knew the struggle.
They knew the struggle.
Yes. And the other individual gave Devin's eulogy. Mm. And so when I felt like I was going insane through his journey, throughout his journey, when I was unhinged, I'd always walk back in those doors. Mm. And I'm like, can I please come to a parent meeting? I'm losing it.
I think it's important. I think it's really important. That's why I go to my Al-Anon and I stay immersed with other people that have the same or shared, you know, similar experiences, because it is, it's very important to remain aware that this, that we're not alone. It's very important to remain aware of, that's what we wanted for our boys, right? And we wanted that to keep doing the work. It's, you know, work to stay well, to stay mentally healthy, and, the mind, body, the physical, like that, you know, the pyramid, of just the, you know, Al-Anon has their emblem, which is, you know, it's a pyramid. It's the mind, body, and soul and spirit, what you would like to say with that. But we are, you know, we're only as strong as if the three are working together. And so when we are like not focusing on one and we're letting one go, it's like, imagine a table with three legs. It's like, you're going to fall over. You will, like at times of really high stress, holidays, and when you're really struggling, when you're processing so much, you will fall over if you don't reach for those sources of support. And as we are seeing so many things happen on the news and all of the absolute, you know, opinions, and there's a lot of divisiveness, we are going to, we want to start. And so we want to start sharing just our truths, knowing that these are our truths to share. If anything resonates with you and you feel, you know, always reach out, and we do get your messages, but, this isn't a left or right. This isn't political. This is a crisis level epidemic of, young people. 18 to 40 is the highest death, in America. And that is unacceptable.
It's unacceptable.
It's unacceptable. I've had enough.
I've had enough.
I'd like to see 100,000 people protesting the hundreds and thousands of children, like I just said, the age, that are dying.
And if you see parents, as we wrap up this episode, but as you see a mother, if you see a father who is struggling with a child who has addiction, what do we need?
Kindness, compassion.
A hug. We don't need advice.
No.
And just, we don't need advice. Give us a hug.
Mm-hmm.
And as we go forward, we'll address more in the next episodes.
Yeah, it's time.
Yeah, it's time. And there's been a fury unleashed in me that can't be contained.
I've spent a lot of time wringing my hands and doing, you know, it's I'm coming up on 4 years. May 22 will be 4 years, and I've got a voice. I've got my square, my triangle, however you want to call it, that I'm going to sit in, and I'm going to use my voice, and I'm going to use it.
Well, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be where I'm at without you.
Same. Yeah. Same.
So
you've allowed me to open up my own opinion again, and my son's life matters.
And we're stronger together.
That's right.
Welcome to the DK 805 podcast, Christy and
Katrina. Reach out. You're not alone. We love you.
We love you. Thank you.